The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the National Intel Report. I'm your host, John Stadtmiller. Why am I sing-songing today? I am your host, John Stadtmiller. Anyhow, this is the National Intel Report. How you doing? I'm your host. I was the guy who was here yesterday and the day before and for 25 years. You know who I am. At any rate, it is the sixth day of December 2018. A couple of weeks ago, started to really notice. First of all, let me do some background on this. You know, the 3.7% unemployment rate, the 4.5 million that went back to work, happy days are here again, stock market at all-time high. Everybody's playing pocket pool while walking through the graveyard with their eyes rolling around in their heads, going, I don't see nothing, I'm not scared. Well, I started to notice what the economy was actually doing. And being the cynical one that I actually am, I always paid attention to the indicators to the markets. So here we have the falsely inflated Wall Street. They're buying back all their stocks. And, well, it looks really attractive. Yeah, right. It's an imminent front. But I watched this economy very closely. And at one point in time, I thought, you know, maybe this is the fake it till we make it strategy to kind of restore people's hope a little bit, because if that train leaves its station, you know it's all over. Jeez, if I wasn't such an anti-Semitic guy, I could have made a crack about the train leaving Dachau at this point, but I won't. I'll spare you. But, folks, the economy is not good. I was listening to Jeff Bennett today. I'm glad to have this guy back because he is the one metals guy and he's actually got a brain on his shoulders. Jeff's one of the guys, he won't steer you wrong. He takes great pride in telling you how things are. And I was listening to him today and he mentioned that Ford Motor was going to get out of the business of building cars. And he mentioned one car that I did not think about, and they're going to keep the Ford Focus as well as the Mustang. See, where Ford never sought to discontinue the Mustang, just keep developing it. General Motors, in their infinite wisdom, decided at one point in time to drop the Camaro rather than doing something innovative and exciting. The reason why the Camaro came around was because of the Ford Mustang that was introduced in 1964. Now, nobody knew it was on a Ford Falcon platform, but it was, you know, long-nosed and short rear deck, and it was just kind of cool-looking. Well, they couldn't build the damn things fast enough. So a couple of years later, what does General Motors do? They come out with their Camaro, and it was a hit. The 67 Camaro, when it hit, 68, 69, and it just kind of petered out in 70, 71, because nobody could understand the major body changes, but it's neither here nor there. So Jim, in his infinite wisdom, what do? They cut out the one competing sports-type-like car that they built because they couldn't come up with any innovative ideas fresh and new for the market, which has always been there, by the way. So after listening to Jeff today, you know, GM reported the other day that they're cutting out five complete car lines, shutting down five factories, and, you know, on the story goes, well, they're going to kind of get out of building the car business as well. But you know what is really happening here? GM made the fatal mistake of trying to tell people that the sedan market, people just aren't buying sedans anymore. The sedan market has peaked. No, I'll tell you what's going on here. What is going on is they can't compete. Drive around any city in the USA. Take a look at the sedans around you. What are they? They're Toyotas, they're Nissans, they're Mazdas, they're BMWs. They cannot, so therefore they will not compete. They have given up the American car market to the Japanese. Now they're going to rely on building trucks. Let me see. I think we're staring in the face. They're politely calling it a recession. not to be too macabre. I'll get into this a little bit later, but recession? No, we have been in depression-like. Now it's kind of a deep recession, but now they're warning us that next year there's going to be a recession. It's already here, but if they're admitting to a recession, this whole thing has now been a recovery, folks. Come on, get the spirit, get with the program. Happy days are here again. Really? Okay. I'm looking at the indicators, and everything's telling me you're full of monkey milk. So now I see Ford and General Motors, and they're downsizing, getting ready for next year. Knowing the amount of debt that we're carrying, the retirement funds that aren't there, and I'm talking about every damn state out there, folks. This thing is going to get ugly. Now, geez, just in the time of Tuesday, we had an 800-point Dow Jones industrial drop. Well, lucky for us, we had a Herbert Walker bend down and kiss his butt day, so we had to shut all the banks down. Well, no, the banks were open. It was the federal buildings and the post offices were closed. That's right. But they closed Wall Street. Wow. And everybody was holding their breath this morning when the markets opened up again. Well, and the news really hasn't been all that good. The market was down, I think, at 1.5 or 600 points. Now, when that happens, if you listen very closely, you can hear the vinyl and the leather of the chairs of the people on Wall Street being sucked right up off the chair. These guys are nervous because they know the lie that they've been floating out there. You know, it's kind of like pre-2008. When the mortgage-backed security and everybody started to figure out that, you know what, something ain't right here. And we're talking about lower-level people that wouldn't know a stock portfolio from a hole in the ground or only do what they were trained to do like a SEAL. Even they were starting to get the idea. And when that hit, my God, it was angst, terror, if you will. People were losing jobs, they were losing their houses, and these guys, unlike, you know, the common people out there, you know, us commoners, you know, that work a 40-hour-a-day week and try to spend time with the kids and try to make the money stretch as far as, these guys were making money hand over fist, and according to their lifestyle, you had to spend what you took in, otherwise, well, you're nothing. Well, these guys were faced with nothing because the only thing that they had when this little sleigh ride ended was nothing but massive debt. And a lot of them went down hard. Now, we kind of had this drunken sailor problem prior to 2008. People had credit cards. Their amounts were just maxed out. And, well, you know the story after that. But here we go with GM. Latest here on GM. General Motors Company and Ford Motor Company both are cutting slow-selling sedans from their U.S. lineups, but only GM is threatening to close at least five plants here and in Canada to make it happen. The difference lies, in part, in the wonky industry term that means the difference between profit and loss, jobs or the road to unemployment in modern auto plants, capacity utilization. That's the percentage of the plant's maximum capacity being used to build vehicles. Break-even is considered 80%, and GM has a lot more U.S. plants running below that threshold than rivals Ford and Fiat Chrysler Automobile. And there's reasons why Ford did that. I won't go into it at a time. This time, 8 of the 12 GM assembly plants in the U.S. were operating at 80% capacity or less this year. Kind of flies in the face of happy times are here again and 3.7% unemployment. Yeah. According to data from the LMC Automotive, now that's a stark contrast with crosstown rivals Ford and Chrysler. Only 3 of Ford's 9 U.S. assembly plants were running below 80% of capacity in 2018. 3 out of the 9. So that's 33%, one-third, was running at 80% or below. In 2018, 2 of Fiat Chrysler's 6 plants were below that same threshold. He figured out just about the same percentage. Now, there's no question that when you look across the region, GM plant utilization is behind both Ford and Fiat Chrysler. And this is according to Jeff Schuster, an analyst with the LMC, Automotive. We've been flagging that as a warning sign. They got caught with more of a car capacity. Their scale led to this, and they also had too much on the car side. Now, this is, most of this is doublespeak, but please bear with me. As a result, GM is forced to make painful moves to brace for an uncertain future. The automaker last week announced it would idle 4 U.S. facilities in 2019. As it gears up to spend billions preparing for an electric and autonomous vehicles of the future. Yeah, isn't that nice? We can't make any money with the junk we're selling right now, so we're going to downsize, spend billions of dollars to make stuff that people don't want. Now, there's some real good thinking. And let me ask you this, folks. If you could get an electric car, would you buy one? Maybe you might buy one if you could charge the damn thing up and run it for the week. Or go more than 200 miles before you had to stop and charge for how many hours to drive another couple hours only to recharge again. It makes no sense. The damn things are heavy, they're expensive, and they ain't got much of a range. And if you haven't noticed, buying electricity is not exactly bargain basement prices, especially when the lefties are out there trying to kill anything in this country that generated electricity. So now we're going to focus on electric cars and autonomous vehicles. And here again, folks, are you? I couldn't sleep on an airline flight because I was worried if the pilot, if he got in trouble, could handle the craft and I would walk away alive. Okay, would you be willing to sit in a car and let it drive itself? I wouldn't. I certainly wouldn't. There's this little thing about control. I got this nasty thing in my head about control. You know, if I see a pedestrian walking across the street, I couldn't jump in the front seat fast enough to disengage and apply the brakes to keep from making them, what, instant hamburger? Or is this all going to be done in one fell swoop? Because I don't want to be out there when everything is being regulated and controlled and we got some asset driving down the street at 80 miles an hour sideways because he just consumed a full fifth of Four Roses whiskey. You can see the associated problems here. But at any rate, this was like during this recession / depression that we went through, although we're going to find new sources for energy. Oh, yeah, now that's a good idea. Let's all go green. Let's put everything into solar. Let's do a bunch of R&D and spend a lot of money to do what? In times such as the last 10 years we went through, ladies and gentlemen, you want the leastest for the mostest for the leastest. Got that backwards. In other words, give me this cheapest electricity as you can, okay? Give me as cheap gas prices as I can possibly get. Cheap works when people don't have a whole lot of money. But in the, and I, oh God, I hasten to say this, is General Motors has been around more than 100 years. Maybe General Motors, and trust me on this one, folks, because I used to work for the company as much as I bitched and complained about it. it has been a job provider and building our conveyances here for more than a century. So hang on to your hat here about what I'm about to say. God, I can't believe it. I hope these people go out of business for their stupidity, for their arrogance, for this idea that they could make a mistake, try to cover it up, but still try to shove it down the consumer's throats. You know, the very person that you supposedly depend on to make your living, to buy the product, that's all you're about is making that car, and the customer gets screwed repeatedly? They had a real bad PR problem. Why did they have a big PR problem? Because they had nasty cars. All of them did. So, big surprise here. But you saw the lightning strike. You just haven't heard the rumble yet. How far off it is? I guess we're going to find out. Ford and Fiat Chrysler also assemble more of their top-selling vehicles, trucks, and SUVs exclusively in the United States than GM, according to LMC data. GM's San Luis Potosí plant in Mexico that produces GM's second best-selling vehicle, the Equinox, has run at 91% capacity utilization this year. In Silao, Mexico, plant is running at 145%, building the four-door Silverado and Sierra. Isn't it nice that the trucks that you see out on the road is being built in Mexico? Yeah, viva la Mexico! Screw you, American! Yeah. Some of this is due to what types of products are in those plants, or what type of plants they are, said Kristen Dzek. I'm not going to try to say that twice. Vice President of Ann Arbor-based Center for Automotive Research. GM has a dedicated plant for Corvette. Yeah. I've seen the new body styles. They look like cheap little kit cars. They're supposedly out there competing against the world's supercars. Well, it might have a speed like a supercar, but it still looks like it was put together with some Revell kit model that some kid bought and put together when he was 6 years old. Excuse my overzealous comparisons here, but it bothers me. Now, one of the eight GM U.S. plants running at 80% or lower, six build sedans or compact cars. Of the eight GM U.S. plants running at 80% or below, six build sedans or compact cars. Refer back to my, we're going to get out of the sedan business because it's peaked. No, it hasn't. You've lost your edge is what it is. You can't compete with the people that are giving you innovative products that look cool, will drive a long time, that handle well, that accelerate well, entertains the hell out of you, and you look good doing it. Oh, can't go there. GM is spread out with more facilities, according to this person from Ann Arbor, whose name I'm not going to try to repeat. Ford builds more of what it sells in the U.S. in the U.S. That includes its best-selling F-Series pickups, all of which are built in the United States. We won't talk about Ford making their aluminum body that didn't hold up for crap. As a matter of fact, I think GM made hay out of that one, punching holes in the beds of F-Series pickups, but that's neither here nor there. For now, that's keeping Ford and Fiat Chrysler safe from President Donald Trump's scrutiny. They haven't been tweeted at, have they? Well, GM CEO Mary Barra's austerity measures drew the ire of the president and other politicians and left the United Auto Workers and hourly employees boiling mad. GM expects to cut 8,000 salaried positions. And then you notice how the numbers keep floating around? They're floating around for a reason. They don't want to give you an exact number. They know the exact number. What they don't want to tell you is the exact number. We'll take this break. I'll get into this a little bit more. We'll also take your phone calls today at 800-313-9443. Do you think it's dark out there early? Well, take another look, because it's dark for the GM employees, because they don't know what the hell's coming next.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855, the number 2, keep it today.
Well, prepping for the future. GM says its restructuring actions are proactive steps to prepare for the future. It plans to idle 4 U.S. plants at the height of the national contract negotiations next year with the UAW. I'm sorry, I thought it was 5 plants, but see how the numbers keep changing. Now it's 4. And that would cut some of its money-losing sedans after the plants building the Buick LaCrosse, Cadillac CT6, and Chevy Impala and Volt stop production. Well, gee, I thought the future was electric cars, so why would they stop building the Volt? Well, we continuously look at our operations for opportunities to improve our efficiency and capacity utilization, said Kimberly Carpenter, head of GM Labor Communications. You know, that if I was going to do doublespeak, I would have said we continuously look at our operations for the opportunities to improve our cars and hence our capacity. Usually, but see, the opportunities to improve our cars is not in that sentence, just our efficiency. We believe the recent actions move us in the right direction based on changing market conditions and customer preferences. You idiots, go out and look in any street of America and see what the people are buying. God. Former Fiat Chrysler CEO Sergio Marchionne saw the sedan's decline coming more than 3 years ago. And again, another company that can't compete in the sedan market. Remember the stuff that Chrysler was making, little slab side, little chopped off things, putting big engines in them, making them go really fast, but they were still ugly Chryslers. Fiat Chrysler in 2016 began expanding capacity for Jeeps and trucks after it decided to cut most of its sedans. Its plants are running so near capacity that the automaker has trouble shutting down facilities to retool for profitable new products. That's because they've already cut down and sold out. Real easy when you don't have all that excess capacity. Government bails you out. You turn around and sell the company off to a foreign owner. Yeah. Ford said in April it plans to drop 5 sedans by the beginning of the next decade. Okay, so that's a year off. Okay, thank you. It already had plans to build SUVs and trucks in their place in the U.S. Now, Ford hasn't officially said how large its headcount reduction will be. That should read, Ford hasn't said officially how many heads they're going to cut off. Ford says the cuts it made a decade ago to its plants were deep enough. And again, Ford, and throughout that Ford family, there was that granddaddy. What the hell was his name? Harold? Oh, no, it was Henry, that knew what ran the world, knew how to build cars inexpensively for the public. Yeah, that guy. GM has argued it is trying to avoid those deep cuts this time with proactive measures like those announced a week ago. Product allocation is likely to take center stage in GM's negotiations with the UAW next year. As the union fights to keep plants open, Ford negotiated most of that during the last round of UAW negotiations 3 years ago. Forecasting and planning made that happen. Ford President of Global Operations Joel Hinrich said, it was really important for these manufacturing sites have the kind of utilization that we're talking about, because that's what protects the jobs. We do that by filling up the plants with products that people want. Ford's Michigan assembly plant had a 25% utilization rate through November. 25%, folks. In October, the Wayne plant began making the 2019 Ranger, a product Ford says will sell better than the Focus and C-Max that they've been building there. I'm very familiar with that plant. I used to drive by it every day. UAW President Rory Gamble said in a statement Wednesday that a big part of the collective bargaining process is understanding plant utilization. The automakers and the UAW will begin to negotiate a new 4-year contract in 2019. And again, what is apparent to me, and I'm not going to bother to read any more to you, because quite frankly, I'm bored with it, and I know you are as well. But I wanted to get these facts out to you because of shades to things of to come here in this country. I mean, what I see throughout this story is we failed to be innovative, to be aggressive in our own marketplace, building a product that people wanted. That's what's screaming out at me between the lines that are written on the page. Just humor me tomorrow. Just ambling around in any town, USA. Take a look around you. When you get caught at the light, take a look at the car in front of you, on the either side of you or behind you. Chances are it's going to be a foreign-born product. And this was maddening. During the 80s, when all this overcapacity and they just had to do downsizing, when GM pulls out the axe and does the head-cutting routine, only GM could lay off 30,000 at one crack. But again, it's they've lost the ability to project their own marketplace and to build the product that marketplace will go, I think I'll buy that. What goes up must come down.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
This is too good to be true, except this time it is real. 100%, no joke. How about a $25,000 membership to Front Sight Firearms Training Facility as a thank you bonus for a one-time donation to RBN of only $400? It is a Commander Lifetime membership with no yearly fees or dues. The training is free for the rest of your life with over 50 different classes. Then leave it to your designated beneficiary. You provide the approved firearm, holster, ammo, eye, and ear protection. Many features and bonuses are included, more than you would ever expect or believe. This is the ultimate graduation present, wedding gift, etc., etc. See the details. Go to RBN's webpage and frontsight.com to make it happen. You will hear this offer only on this radio network. Help keep RBN alive. Tell 5.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. As most of you know, my regular listeners, I offer energy cleaners for sale at my website. If you don't have a clue what I'm talking about, go to my website, thelibertyman.com. Educate yourself about these marvelous healing devices. We focus on pain mitigation and getting a great night's sleep. Arthritis pain, joint pain, back pain, doesn't matter. Keep in mind, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. Energy cleaners, $285, shipping included to American zip codes. You can educate yourself all about the energy cleaner right there at my website, the patent application, the wonderful testimonials. Be sure and check out the factory-made fitted mattress pads to go with the energy cleaner. Now, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. I have a toll-free order line, or you can order it right at my website at thelibertyman.com. The toll-free order line is 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. Thank you.
Many people tell us about their experience with Extendivite. Just listen to what Glenn has to say.
Prior to taking it, I had diabetic neuropathy. The Extendivite reduced that significantly. Acid reflux was reduced. I had athlete's foot, very severe. Trimmed that down to about 75% dandruff. Almost completely gone. I had occipital neuralgia at the base of my skull. I was having migraines, reduced by about 90%. Heart palpitations, my heart would kind of stall out. I would skip a beat. Very uncomfortable. And when walking from downstairs going to sleep, by the time I got to the bedroom, which is just one flight of stairs, my heart was pounding, coming out of my chest. My vision was blurry. This completely solved that problem. Great product. Thanks.
Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Why? Do me a favor, as much as I like Foreigner, dump that song, because it just, we're not talking to an audience that gets drunk or high till they can't see straight, okay? Get rid of that song. Take it out of my computer, please. As the secretary's leaving for the day, laughing as she's walking out the door. Oh, okay. Here's a new one for me. Let me see if I can deduce what this name actually means. Rattlebones? Is this an older person from Colorado Springs, Colorado? Let's find out.
Yes, sir.
Hello, Rattlebones.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Herr Stadtmüller.
Uh-oh. Jawohl.
Like, yeah, that is right. I just want to say thank you. My girlfriend and I purchased the front site membership.
Mm-hmm.
I'm spreading it from my friends. Everybody needs to get better about handling their weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, sir, thank you so very much sincerely for offering this. And, I just love your station. You have such quality intellectual gentlemen, that give their time or even are on the salary over there. So, thank you, sir, sincerely.
All right. Well, I appreciate your call and thank you, and say hi to your girlfriend for me.
I will most certainly do that. Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Isn't that refreshing? They've paired up. They're one like mine one of these days. She may be there covering his backside and save his life. See, this is the kind of thing that people never consider. You know, how many years have we been in that stage that, well, the women wanted men to be more like women? And then they got what they asked for and they're not happy? Gee, I wonder why. I wonder why. 800-313-9443. So at any rate, happy times are here again? No, it's more of the anxious and no, we don't know what's going to happen. Well, yes and no. We can look at the indicators and we won't lie about it. We won't do a rosy paint the picture, you know, happy days are here again. We know that there are fundamental changes that need happen for the continuance of this once great country and can be again. Sorry, Mr. Trump, what I've seen so far, this ain't the grand plan to make America again. In my estimation, I don't think you should wait till 2020 to run again. I think you ought to go after the banks now because they sure have been after us. Now comes the time of the program. Now, this is kind of like a Christmas story. So gather around, children, make yourself comfortable, get your comforters up, and get your hot chocolate out. Because I'm going to start telling you the real truth about Ronnie Reagan and the Contra drugs for guns thing and Barry Seal and, you know, what's the title of the movie American Made with Tom Cruise? It was a story. That was the stuff that they put in that was factual, but they left a lot of facts out, a lot. But still, what you saw on the screen was what's pretty fairly accurate, but just scaled down immensely. On March 16th, 1986, President Ronald Reagan went on national television to make a desperate pitch for the restoration of congressional aid to the Nicaraguan Contras. Remember that? I do. This particular war had never been popular with Americans who stubbornly remained indifferent to lurid scenarios pro-offered by the great communicator that the Sandinistas might sweep north through Guatemala and Mexico to menace Texas. Yeah. So Reagan deployed a new tactic denouncing the Sandinistas as a regime that had its hand in the drug trade. Yeah, I know what you're thinking. Just hold that thought for a second. For the previous 6 months, Oliver North and his colleagues at the National Security Council and the CIA had been leaking stories to the Washington Press Corps, charging that the leadership of the Nicaraguan government, including Defense Minister Humberto Ortega, was in league with the Medellin cartel and with Fidel Castro in a hemisphere-wide cocaine trafficking network. On that March evening, Reagan displayed a series of grainy photographs purporting to show Sandinista officials loading duffel bags of cocaine in a C-123K military transport plane destined for Miami, Florida. I know that every American parent concerned about the drug problem. You know, this came from the same president whose wife, it was her big deal as being first lady, of getting those little pee screens in the stand-up male urinals, just say no to drugs. Yeah. Thank you, Nancy. Should have married the other one. Yeah, the other one that dumped you that looked very much like Nancy Reagan. But that's neither here nor there. He went on to say this picture secretly taken in a military airfield outside Managua shows Federico Vaughn, a top aide to one of the 9 commandants who rule Nicaragua, loading aircraft with the illegal narcotics bound for the United States. No. What this part of the story doesn't tell you, doesn't show you where the plane landed and they offloaded all the guns. They just showed you the cocaine. Okay, anyhow. As Time magazine editor told his reporter, Lawrence Zuckerman, this was precisely the kind of drug story that would end up on the front pages of American newspapers. But it turned out to be a setup. Part of the elaborate sting operation concocted by Oliver North, the CIA, George Bush's drug task force, and the convicted drug runner named Berryman Adler. Oh, what was his last name? Seal. We always knew him as Barry Seal. It was Seal who had piloted the plane, equipped with CIA-installed cameras, to that Nicaraguan airstrip and brought the cocaine back to Homestead Air Force Base in Florida. Notice I said Homestead Air Force Base, a military base, driving cocaine into a military base. But let's not get excited. Nothing to see here. Seal received more than $700,000 and a reduced sentence on pending drug convictions. Yeah. Years later, the DEA admitted that Seal's CIA-sponsored mission was the only drug flight involving the Sandinistas it had any information about. To this day, Frederico Vaughn remains a figure clouded by mystery. No one's quite sure who he is or who he's working for. Seal wasn't around to answer any questions either. A few weeks before Reagan's television address, Seal was conveniently gunned down while in federal witness protection program in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, a victim of Oliver North's press leaks. Now, Barry Seal was a veteran of both the drug trade and the intelligence business. Born in Baton Rouge, Seal was a bulky, athletic man, beguiling presence. He was 5'7" and weighed 250 pounds, which would probably stature more like a brick than anything else, and wore thick mutton chop sideburns. He had a passion for cars, women, and Snickers bars, though he neither smoked nor drank nor used the stuff that he was flying around, namely cocaine. Seal's first contract with the CIA came in the 1960s while he served as a pilot for the U.S. Army Special Forces Division. He left the Army in 65 to become, at the age of 26, a pilot for Trans World Airlines. And it's apparent that Seal continued his relationship with the agency during his employment with the airline. In 1972, and here's where it varies from the movie, because it shows him just walking off the plane and his co-pilot going, "Barry, where are you going?" Not true. In 1972, Seal was busted by the U.S. Customs Service for attempting to smuggle 14,000 pounds of C4 explosives into Mexico. God. The bomb-making material was destined for the CIA-trained cell of anti-Castro Cubans. Seal lost his job at TWA but escaped prosecution when the CIA intervened. The agency told the U.S. Attorney's Office that a trial would threaten national security interest. Boy, that was a true statement, but people didn't understand it when it was uttered. It wasn't long before Seal turned his considerable skills as a pilot and entrepreneur in Latin America's emerging black market in drugs and guns. In the mid-1970s, he bought a small fleet of planes, recruited a network of ace pilots and mechanics, many of which, by the way, were veterans in the Vietnam War and Laos, and developed ties to the leadership of the Medellin drug cartel. By his own admission, Seal became the Medellin cartel's chief link to the cocaine markets of southeastern United States. In federal court, Seal testified as a government witness in a drug trial that he had earned more than $50 million smuggling cocaine and marijuana. Yeah, not quite true. But the pilot was mostly certainly being uncharacteristically modest. Investigations for the Arkansas State Police told the U.S. Justice Department that they believe Seal's enterprise had raked in between $3 and $5 billion from late 1970s up to his bloody death in 1986. Seal's bank records show in 1981 he was making daily deposits of $50,000 in his favorite banks in the Bahamas. The drug money was reinvested in a variety of schemes, hotels, casinos, TV network, and a drug company. Ironic, isn't it? In 1982, Seal moved his base of operations from New Orleans to a small town in Mena, Arkansas, western Arkansas. It was the same year that Seal once again hooked up with his friends at the CIA, who were anxious to use Seal's fleet of planes to ferry supplies to the Contra camps in Honduras and Costa Rica. The flight plans for Seal's drug enterprise provided the perfect cover for illicit resupply missions. Seal's planes would fly from Mena to the Medellin cartel airstrips in the mountains of Colombia and Venezuela, making refueling stops in Panama and Honduras, and then return to Mena, where the planes would drop parachute-equipped duffel bags loaded with cocaine over Seal-controlled farms near Mena, which, by the way, the CIA all helped set it up. In the movie, it displays the CIA just showing up and saying, "Here, Barry, here you got an airport. Oh, here you got... you got hundreds of acres of land here." Seal's men would retrieve the drugs in pickup trucks, deliver them to the cartel's distributors in New Orleans, Miami and New York, each flight packed between 200 and 500 kilos of cocaine, a load that would then, and we're talking about 80s prices here, folks, fetch about $13 million. By the early 1980s, SEAL's planes were making several flights a week. In 1982, the CIA approached SEAL about adding a new element to his flight plans. Double plus good. They wanted him to carry loads of supplies and guns on his trips to Central America. The quid pro quo seemed clear enough to SEAL. If he would consent to help the U.S. intelligence agencies, they would once again act as his protectors, keeping his planes from being hassled by U.S. Customs and the DEA. In addition, the CIA agreed to outfit SEAL's squadron of planes with the latest high-tech aviation electronics. The CIA was familiar with at least some of SEAL's aircraft, which by then included a Learjet, several helicopters, and some very large cargo planes, because many of them had been bought from the CIA proprietaries, such as Air America and the Southern Air Transport. The deal seemed to pay off for SEAL. In the early 1980s, the U.S. Customs Service backed off drug investigations into one of SEAL's pilots. In a memo to his superiors, a custom agent noted, Joe, of course his last name is redacted, works for SEAL and cannot be touched because SEAL works for the CIA. Now, some of the weapons SEAL's planes flew into Contra camps were manufactured by a Fayetteville, Arkansas gunmaker named William Holmes. Holmes specialized in production of automatic pistols, mounted with silencers, a weapon of choice for the CIA executive actions. Boy, isn't that a nice euphemism? Executive action. Wow. Holmes, who had been making guns for the CIA since the mid-50s, testified in a federal court case that the agency asked him to make 250 of the weapons for SEAL. He later described SEAL as a ramrod for the MENA gun deal. In 1983, SEAL's luck with law enforcement seemed to be running out. The DEA nailed him for smuggling 200,000 quaaludes from a Fort Lauderdale airport as part of a sting called Operation Screamer. After his indictment, SEAL approached the DEA and offered services as an informant. And of course, we can't do that. DEA turned him down. Yeah, sanctimonious people that they are. SEAL was convicted in February of 1984 and faced the possibility of spending the next 10 years in a Fed prison. Sorry, folks, some of this stuff makes me laugh because, you know, they bust drug dealers on the street. Well, where are those drugs coming from? That's right, coming from your government or the protected ones. Desperate to retain his freedom, SEAL apparently, on the advice of his contacts in the CIA, made one last call, this time to Vice President George Bush's drug task force. The drug runner was swiftly granted an appointment. Notice I said George Bush's, that's George Herbert Walker Bush, the guy that was such a great guy. He was so timid, but he was so American. Yeah. The drug runner was swiftly granted an appointment. He fired up his Learjet and flew to Washington, where he met with Bush's staffer named Jim Howell. Howell, a former drug agent at U.S. Customs, interviewed SEAL and then took him to see the top DEA agent named Kenneth Kennedy. Howell vouched for SEAL, and SEAL complained bitterly that the DEA agents in Fort Lauderdale had brushed him off for personal reasons. Now, although the official position of the DEA was that SEAL offered to help the agency gain information on the Medellin cartel, Kennedy recalls that SEAL also boasted that he could keep the Reagan administration expose about the Sandinistas' role in the drug trade. Now, Kennedy told the Congressional Committee that SEAL informed him at their initial meeting that officials of the Nicaraguan government are involved in smuggling cocaine into the United States. Specifically, it was those evil Sandinistas. Kennedy said that SEAL promised to fly to Nicaragua, pick up loads of cocaine, and bring them back to the United States. This wasn't for the, folks, this was not, and I repeat, this was not for the Nicaraguan government. Now, Kennedy referred SEAL to two Miami-based DEA agents, Ernst Jacobson and Robert Jora. After he was debriefed in Washington, a phone call was made to Group 6 in the Miami Field Division, Jacobson said in testimony before the House Judiciary Committee in 1989. We were asked if I wanted to work with Mr. Seal, and he said I would. Seal flew to Miami the next day, where he met with Jura, Jacobson, and Steve LeClaire, an attorney with the U.S. Justice Department. Seal told the DEA men that he could easily set up delivery of 3,000 kilos of cocaine from Jorge Ochoa's operation in Colombia. After this meeting, Seal was officially signed up as a confidential informant for the DEA, and his DEA ID number was SG1840028. The DEA agreed to pay him $800,000 a year for his services and postponed his sentencing on the Qualude smuggling conviction. What do they say? What goes up must come down? You get up with cocaine, what do? You come down with Qualudes. A little bit more on this when we get back. 800-313-9443. Only if you're out there alive and breathing.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets, even with a growing audience every day. RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org, and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you a few from Amazon.com. By Mel. Great product. My husband and father-in-law use it regularly. Both my husband and father-in-law have had significant change in their blood pressure and overall health. By Amazon customer. It works for me. Returned to buy the tincture and the capsules as they were on sale during February. Unlike some other products, this one worked for blood pressure and occasional irregular heartbeat. Extendivite produced noticeable results after just two bottles, a four-month supply. I take Extendivite three times a day, every day. I think this supplement has helped with my increased fitness regime and to lower my blood pressure. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
If you be my bodyguard, I can be your long-lost pal. I can call you Betty, Betty, when you call me, you can call me out. A man walks down the street, he says, why am I short of attention? Got a short little span of attention, and all my nights are so long. Where's my wife and family? What if I die here? Who'll be my role model now that my role model is gone? He ducked back down the alley with some roly-poly little bat-faced...
So, a few days later, Mr. Barry Seal called two of the Medellin cartel's top operatives in Miami, Felix Dixon Bates and Carlos Lito Bustamante, to let them know that he was back in business. Bustamante oversaw the distribution of the Medellin's cocaine in the U.S. Bates was a longtime pilot for Ochoa, network and specialized in smuggling exotic animals to Ochoa's ranch in Colombia. Bustamante told Seal that Ochoa wanted him to ferry a Titan 404 plane from Miami to the Medellin. Seal agreed to the plan, and on April 4th of 84, he and Bates flew to Colombia. They were met at the airstrip by Ochoa. Precisely what happened at this meeting is the subject of some controversy. DE agents Jorah and Jacobson claim that it was at this session that the subject of the Nicaraguans first came up. They say that Ochoa told Seal that the cartel was moving most of its operations to Nicaragua because of increasing pressures on them in Colombia. Yeah, don't think so. They were well protected and they had everybody paid off in Colombia. Why would you do that when that's your production point? How the hell are you going to move your operations from Colombia to Nicaragua? At any rate, this scenario seems far-fetched for the number of reasons, not at least because at the time the cartels seemed to be operating with near impunity in Colombia. I just said that. Panama and Honduras and Costa Rica. Now, alliance with the Sandinistas would only antagonize the U.S. government, which the cartel was trying so hard to placate. And by the way, a little off script here, the excuse that the CIA gave that, well, these drug operations weren't really shut down, and they would do operations to shut the competition down so they could better monitor the bigger players. What? That was the reasoning. I'm not going to try to explain it. That's what they said. The following day, Seal relayed the plans to the DEA, as I said. Now, Seal took the opportunity to make two trips to his bank in the Bahamas, where he deposited several hundred thousands of dollars in cash. A week before Seal was scheduled to fly to Medellin, he blew out an engine on his Learjet during a test run. The DEA paid to have the plane repaired. In the meantime, the DEA agent named S.B. Bilbao passed on to the CIA Seal's contention that Ochoa organization was preparing to move its base of operations to Nicaragua, according to a memo prepared by DEA agent Jorah. The CIA expressed considerable interest in the Seal operation. Yeah, look what we have here. We just discovered it. With his Learjet still in the repair hangar, Seal flew to Panama on May 18th for a meeting with the equivalent of the board of directors of the Medellin cartel. At the session were George Ochoa and his brother Fabio Ochoa, Pablo Escobar, Bates, and Gonzo Rodriguez Gacha. Seal arranged to trade one of his helicopters, previously owned by the CIA front, for a Merlin 3B owned by the cartel. Now, it was also at this session that Seal said he was introduced to the mysterious figure of Federico Vaughn. We'll pick this story up after the top of the hour. Time to get another cup of hot cocoa and some marshmallows and wrap back up, because we're not done with this story. This is a story you've never been told, folks. And we still have the criminals. Well, one just got buried the other day. Down here in Texas, we call him 41. I just call him an ex-dead, no-good president. But we'll do more of this after the top of the hour break.
We must take America back. We must take America back.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. because you can handle the truth.